Hey, friends, and welcome to the Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey podcast. I'm your host, Jamie, and I'm so glad you're here. Each week on this show, I invite a friend to join me, and we chat about the big things in life, the little things in life, and everything in between.
Hey, friends, I'm Nikki Ogden, team member of the Happy Hour podcast. Due to an unexpected crisis, Jamie is going to be delaying her book publicity and tour. She's also going to take a break from social media, public appearances, and recording new shows at this time. We want to give her space to process, discern, and recover. We are so incredibly thankful for the community that Jamie has built here at the Happy Hour, and we know that you want to share your love and support for her. The best way that you can do that is by listening to this pre-recorded show and sharing this episode with a friend. We're so thankful for you.
Hey, y'all, welcome to the Happy Hour. I have a friend on the show who I have had her on the show before. She's been on a long time ago, and she was actually a Happy Hour Live guest of mine years ago. I used to have these events called Happy Hour Live, and this was all pre-pandemic. They were so much fun. Like, I often dream about how do I recreate those events and bring them back. But if you ever came to one, you know what I mean. Well, today, Andy Andrew is on the show. And Andy has a book that came out just yesterday. So it is in the world. You can get it wherever. It's called Braving Change. Release the past, welcome growth, and trust where God is leading you. And I knew before I talked to Andy that this was going to be great. In the middle of the conversation, I thought, this is going to be so just catapulting and encouraging for people listening, because here's what I know is that change happens in our lives all the time. There is not a year that goes by that you don't endure some sort of change. And sometimes we have to release the past. We need to welcome growth and we need to trust where God is leading us. And Andy does this so beautifully in this book and in this conversation. I think you're going to feel a lot of freedom from hearing our conversation, and you're going to be encouraged with it as well. Guys, thanks for being here. I just all the time and 100% overjoyed that you are still choosing to listen to the Happy Hour when there are hundreds, and I mean hundreds, of podcasts that you could spend some time with. And so I'm grateful that you're here, and I promise you that we want to bring you the very best show that we can every single week so that you'll be able to hear amazing guests and be inspired. You guys, I have a favor to ask. If you've been listening to the Happy Hour for one day, like this is your first episode, or for years, or maybe you've been here for 10 years because we're coming up on our 10-year anniversary. I can't even believe it. If you have never left us a rating, a review, it would be the kindest thing you could do for us today. I mean, the absolute kindest. Wherever you listen to podcasts, especially if you listen to them in your Apple app, just go in and give us some 5-star rating if you want. Leave us some kind words. And here's what I need you to know about that. It's not because I need to read kind things about a show that I produce and host. No, not at all. It's that it helps other people find the show. And we really believe in the conversations that we have and the guests that we bring on. And we want other people to find the Happy Hour and join us at the Happy Hour and be a part of it. So when you do that, it helps spread the word. And so it's just kind. It's awesome. We would be so very, very grateful. If I could see you, I would give you a hug and tell you thank you. But anyhow, thank you for doing that. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Here is my conversation with Andy Andrew. Andy Andrew, welcome back to the Happy Hour.
I am so excited to see you and talk to you. It's been too long.
it's been a very long time, and I keep up with you because in a lot of ways, but I also want to say you always send me a Christmas card. And
yes, I do. I'm always praying you didn't move because I'm like, this is still the address I have.
I'm still getting it, and I love it so much. And I have, I feel like every year I say, this is the year I'm going to tackle Christmas cards again because I let it go for like 3 years. And honestly, I feel more peace about it not having to do it. But I love getting your card. And so it's so fun.
I'm glad to send it. It was one of those things that I didn't do for years. And then I was like, I made the excuse that I just wanted family photos, and that's why I did it. I was like, I want to track time. And so I like forced myself, even though it's like so much work, but
I love it. I love it. Well, I'm glad you're here. You are not a stranger to the Happy Hour. You've been on, it's been a while, but you've been on, and then you actually were at one of my Happy Hour Live events, which
that was so fun.
Those are so very much fun. And so I'm glad to have you back. Now, I just want to start here because last time you were here in Austin for the event, you lived in New York City. Yep. And I just have a real sweet spot in my heart for people who live in New York City. Aaron and I love to vacation there. And every time we're there, like we were there last March, and where I was like, I wish we would have done the city life one. Like, if we feel like we passed it, you know, like, we're like, oh, I wish we would have done this, but you don't live in New York City anymore. So tell me what happened. Not what happened, but why'd y'all move?
Yeah, massive change. So I will give you the longest story, very short. But in 2018, my husband went away to this retreat by Pastor Greg Surratt, was invited away. My husband's like, oh, an outdoorsy thing? Like, why would I go to that? And I was like, well, Pastor Greg's inviting you. Just be at the table with him. And I remember when my husband came home from that retreat, there was light back in his eyes. Like, his stubble had grown and he looked like a different man. And it was like my husband came home and I didn't even know he was missing. And I remember I was just sitting there. I started to cry. And in my heart, I went, oh my gosh, we're done pastoring this church. Like, I just had like this vision that flashed before my eyes of us packing up boxes, moving. And I said, this is what's on your life to pastor leaders. Like, we had planted multiple church, like multiple communities out of our church, Liberty Church. And my husband, when I said that, it was like, I saw it. I knew. I was like, I think we're done. And he looked at me like I was crazy. He's like, no, we're not done. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, we weren't in agreement. So I just kind of was like, well, maybe I was wrong. Like, I really felt like that was the end. Fast forward 2020, we pastor through quite possibly the biggest, most difficult leadership, like, storm of our lives, as in, like, every pastor and leader was in the biggest leadership storm of their lives. It wasn't new. It wasn't just us, but New York City was a unique beast. And I'm like looking at Paul, I'm like, are we done? And he said, no. Like, my husband has this very high threshold for leadership pain. And I just was like walking through a lot personally, just navigating leadership in that time. And then 2021 hit. And I was like, okay, we're doing this. Let's charge ahead. And then he sits and looks at me while we're on the beach on vacation. He goes, okay, it's time. And I was like, what? And what's crazy is, like, there was not the right people in place. Two of our friends who are like, we wanted them to pastor us. Like, they're so amazing. Came in, and my husband had started this thing called the Barnabas Network to pastor pastors and leaders. And it was just the right timing. And we had leaders in place to transition the church to. And then we moved to the South, which I never would have thought. We're in Charleston now, which I love, in part of Seacoast Church, but we're just on the team here. And it was the right shift. And now he's helping Pastor Greg, actually, the one who took one on their retreat, oversee the pastors collective in the retreat at Church Creek, which pastors and leaders and cares for them around the clock. And he also has Barnabas Network. So it's like this wild shift that happened with a lot of pain in between, but that's why we're here now.
Wow. Even when you were telling me that story, I got literal chills on my body. And yeah. And I'm just, cause I feel like so many times, well, let me just say this. I was telling a friend last night, we went to dinner with two friends, me and two girlfriends, and we were just chatting. And then one of them was like, okay, how's everyone feeling about life right now? And I said, you know, I feel two things. I feel very content and very expectant. And they're like, how do you have both of those? And I was like, I don't really get it either. But as you were, as I was listening to your story, even you tell that, it's like you had to go through that journey of going like, okay, I'm expectant. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but I'm expecting that something's around the corner. But yet here we are. So we're going to keep on doing what we're doing. Totally. And I think that is a hard place to be in, Andy. And so I want to, before we get to even like, you have an amazing book coming out, all this stuff that's kind of a little bit about this journey too. But when you felt that when Paul came home, you still had to keep pastoring and keep doing all the things. And it's not that you were like, okay, I'm done, I'm quitting. So how do we live out, okay, I have this kind of feeling, maybe something's ending, but yet I'm still here. So I got to keep rolling and I want to be faithful where I am. How did you do that?
The liminal spaces are quite possibly the hardest places to live in, because you do, you sense a change and a shift. And I think all of us have that in different areas of our life where it's like, you know, we cry out to God, like, change my life, like, change my circumstances, do this. And we want it to happen the next day. That was like my mistake in that moment. I was like, all right, let's pack up our boxes. Let's go. And my husband kind of looks at me like I was crazy. But I think within that, what I had to do was, well, because we're, and this is for, I guess, married people. So there's different ways to do this. But because we weren't in agreement, there was no way I was going to kind of try to control or manipulate him or God in that situation. So I was like, okay, well, I guess really surrender, like that daily surrender, and then going, well, God, if I was off and wrong, then what I'm going to do is try to be as present as I possibly can and serve the people and love the people that are in front of me. Because if I didn't in that moment, my heart would have left the building and I wouldn't have been able to be present or serve or love the people where I was at. And little did I know that in, you know, 2 years' time or a year and a half's time, really, we were going to have to maneuver like the roughest storms of our leadership life, just pastoring people in a city that was shut down and it was so dark and hard. So I don't think I could have done that if I wouldn't have settled in my soul. God, I think you may shift us and move us at some stage, but if you don't, I am okay to just serve you and be obedient to you one day at a time. So that's the best advice I can give.
Yeah, that's really so quickly. Good. Yeah. That's so good. I love too how you said I had to make this decision that I wasn't going to manipulate my husband or manipulate God.
Yeah.
And let me just tell you, I can't speak for the men, but I can speak for the women and say we tend to go there often.
Yeah.
And even if you're listening, you're not married, you still have people that you can manipulate within your friend circles, your family, your coworkers, and we do that because we want to be in control. And totally. So you said you made that decision. Did you make that decision because like, oh, I've done this poorly in the past? Or did you make that decision because like, oh, I just know exactly what to do and I'm on it?
Oh no, because I've done it poorly in the past. And I didn't want to become a crazy person too.
Yeah.
Because that's what ends up happening. You start pining for a life and you fantasize about what is not your, it wasn't my portion. Mm-hmm. It wasn't for me to leave at that time. And so I didn't want to leave our people, leave even my own life. Cause we know what we do is like, we stop being present. We fantasize about a life that's not ours. And it's so it's unhealthy. Mm-hmm. So I've done it bad in the past. So that's why.
Yeah, totally. Well, you have a new book actually that came out yesterday, March 5th, and it's called Braving Change, Release the Past, Welcome Growth, and Trust Where God is Leading You. I'm going to make a big assumption that this book came out of that whole journey.
I mean, yes and no. I mean, so yes, it did. It was, so what happened with that when we moved, it was the right book to write then. But it's been a journey that I've been on probably for the last 6 years because pastoring in New York, there was so much grief and loss pastoring there. Because in my mind, and this was my bad, I was in my head when we first moved there, looking to pastor a suburban church. I had a suburban church mindset, but people in New York City come and go all the time. So my heart was continually broken pastoring there.
Like transient, like in and out.
It's just a transient city. Yes, we have people that have been there literally from the start. They're still a part of the church that are from the Bronx, that are from Brooklyn, that are from Manhattan, that they just were born and raised. But part of it was transient. And I didn't realize how much we were just ascending church. That's what God called us to be. So it was part of that, part of just different things in the middle of loss of Paul's mom who passed away and my parents who were with us for 8 years leaving. And that was the moment where God started to really deeply teach me about transition about 6 years ago. And he said, you are like the Israelites. You cry out for change. And then I start to change your life. And you're like, not like that, God. Can you do it another way? And so there was a few different moments along the journey. And then when he took me to the end of the Sermon on the Mount, where really it's the one of the most massive pivotal changes within scripture that we see, where he's saying we're going into the new covenant. The kingdom of heaven is here. And at the very end, you know, the climax, if you will, of the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 7 is him saying, if you don't just listen, but you actually do what I just told you to do, then you're building your life on the rock. So when the storms come, your house isn't going to fall down. But if you just listen and don't do, good luck. You know, I'm obviously paraphrasing. That is not what the scripture says in Matthew 7. But I was like, the Lord took me on a journey to say, no matter the grief, the loss, the pain, the trial, the joy, the celebration, like the things you asked for, the things you didn't ask for, and the change that happened. Like if you keep building here, then when the storms come, because they're promised, you're going to be okay. And so, it was when we, you know, that moment you're like, okay, I feel like I've lived this enough now that even through this massive change, I feel like I can write this and mean it.
Yeah.
And my son, my eldest son, it was his senior year. And so the first was leaving us, you know, all of that. So he just moved back to New York. He just left us.
So you get to go visit New York because your son's there. I love it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hearing you talk about change and transition, and you know, we're in our 40s, and the amount of transition and change within our lives is something I couldn't have imagined. And so as I've gotten older and like, and reading that verse from, you know, the Sermon on the Mount, the end that we've read forever, you start to go, oh, he wasn't joking. Like that's serious. Like, yeah, this is true. Like we will fall.
We will fall, and it works. And I think the other like catalyst for this book was pastoring through 2020 and the grief and the heartache of seeing where I built my life on the sand. Cause I don't want to just point the finger and be like, you know, everyone in my congregation, I was like, no, like that, there's a lot of pride in that. It was me going, oh my gosh, God, I repent, forgive me for building my life and some of my ideals and even like wrong theology on shifting sand. I repent. Will you forgive me? I want to come back to building on the right thing, because this isn't the last storm we're going to face. And I don't think it's not lost on me that this book comes out in an election year in America too. So it's all those little things where it's like, okay, are we going to go higher? Are we going to build on the right thing? Because we're going to keep getting hit. And so, yeah. And even like you just said, it's like when you get married, that's like a prayer. You pray for God, I want to get married. Then you get married and you're like, oh my gosh, they're always here. And then you have the kids and then you're like, wow, they're going to be with me forever. Like all the good things that require so much change in you to continue to remain.
You know, you're talking here about grief, and I think as we talk about change and we talk about transition, there is grief that comes up. I could get a lump in my throat thinking about grief that we have walked through and maybe still endure because of change. But you also think that it's necessary and it's important that we talk about it and feel it. Talk about why it's important to acknowledge our grief in the midst of these transitions.
Well, I think the biggest thing that I've learned personally, and I think a lot of us have learned the hard way, is that if you don't grieve properly, grief stores up in your body. There's a reason why scripturally we see that they when someone died or when they went through something, I mean, they took out sackcloth and ashes. They grieved, they wailed, they mourned. It was loud. Like we'd be very uncomfortable at the funerals, the biblical funerals, right? Yeah. And so I think even for me, there was this season where we had some loss, some really difficult stuff with team. I didn't realize I had been under such control from one person that just isolated me in as a leader. I became emaciated. I had gut issues. Like I was not doing well and trying to get up and lead. And this heaviness came on me. And there was a lot of loss that we had suffered. And I realized only in hindsight that I didn't actually grieve that. Because it's when someone passes away in your life, there's major grief. But it can be loss of a dream, loss of a job, loss of a relationship, where grief is necessary. Loss of what you thought would look life like. Mm-hmm. I thought we'd be in New York forever and my gravestone would be there, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's like loss of what you thought life would be like. And so in that season, a wake up moment for me was when one of my kids came in and I was laying in bed. I wasn't doing well. And I said, Mom, are you going to die? And it was this wake up call. And I realized that, you know, the Lord comforts those who mourn. He says that in Matthew 5:4. Mm. And a lot of times we're either trying to fix it and be okay. And we're rallying around everyone else, but God's going, this is your homework. Shut the door. Turn on a song that gets you right in your heart and in your feelings and tell nobody to come in and let it rip. Like cry your eyes out, let the grief out of your body. Yeah. When you watch someone else cry, you feel something. And when the Lord, like think about where that comes from, we're created in his image. So when we let it go, like our Father comes so near and a lot of times we're holding him at a distance. So homework for a lot of people is to actually let yourself grieve, let yourself go there.
I think it's really hard. The reason people don't want to do that is because it is uncomfortable. It makes us feel like, okay, I just got to push through this. I just got to keep going. Like, or we can tell ourselves lies. Like, it's not that big of a deal. Like, this shouldn't be affecting me this way. And I just think, man, like our feelings are indicators and grief is, it shows us stuff that's there. On the opposite side of that, I think that there's this idea of gratitude as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you ever saw, did you ever see the Christmas Chosen special? Where they have the people singing and stuff.
Yes.
Show
the,
did you see it the very first year it came out when Brandon Lake did his song Gratitude?
Yeah.
Andy, I had never heard that song before I was in the theater, yeah. And I have chills all over my body right now again.
Even talking about it.
Yes, I sobbed. I sobbed because I had never heard the song. And sometimes when you hear a song for the first time, you're like, okay, I like it, but I haven't. I'm not sold. You know, I got to get into this thing. I heard that song and I was like, this is so amazing. And it's about gratitude. Like, you know, I throw my arms and all the things. And you talk about how we need to choose gratitude in the midst. Mm-hmm. And I just think if grieving's hard, dear God, being grateful is really hard. And so what does that look like for you and how do we do it?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting too, because I feel like in transition and change in the liminal space, you can both grieve and have gratitude. And often that's what we're doing is you can weep and wail and mourn. And then you can be like, oh my gosh, God, thank you for loving me enough to cut off the things in my life that are not bearing fruit. Thank you for pruning back that which does. Thank you for replanting my life because you know what the future holds and I don't, and you are sovereign and you are good. Thank you, know what I mean? So it's like all of those things where you, I don't know, it's like such a wild ride, but it's like the grief breaks down and the gratitude rebuilds.
Yeah. And oh, wow.
Yeah. And I just think as we can allow ourselves to have both of those things and hold space for both sometimes in the same day. Remember when we were church planting in our training, someone said, you know, life is sometimes like a Dickens novel. It's the best and the worst of times all in one day. And so allowing yourself to ride it and go through it and move through it is really how we do brave change.
Yeah. I think sometimes when I love how you said the grief and the gratitude at the same time and sometimes in the same day.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that is the truest thing that we've said. Everything we've said is true. But you know what I mean? Like that is, I feel that so often of like, and then the thing is you can beat yourself up and go like, okay, I started the day so well. I was so grateful. And now I'm grieving. And instead of beating yourself up about that, like acknowledging it and leaning into it and knowing, okay, I'm going to grieve. And I just think that is so very hard. When you guys were moving, you made the decision. We almost moved a couple of years ago, and then God did some crazy miraculous things. Like Andy, I can tell you this, and because you will get a kick out of this, because you know this is not my norm. Like God literally showed up in my dreams. It's never happened before. It happened one time, and I literally was like, and you know what I did? I told this story in a book, but this is, I don't know if I said this in the book. I prayed at night, asked God for a dream. I've never prayed that prayer in my entire life. I still would be so scared to pray it now. But I was so desperate. I was so desperate. I prayed for the first time ever in my whole life, God, you have to show up my dreams. He did. Totally revealed something. It was crazy, crazy, crazy. And then I had the audacity the next day to say, God, I don't know. Can you give me one more? Like,
oh my gosh, you're like, just my little Gideon moment.
Like, I'm not real sure about that. But my question for you guys, when you're moving and you're pastoring, you also had a lot of change, but you also laid down roles.
Ooh.
I mean, you guys didn't just like go move to a new place to start a new church and pastor there. You laid down, for a lack of a better word, some authority, some power.
We did.
And then you went under, you were under people there. Let's not give any illusion that you didn't have oversight, but you were the pastors. And then you moved to a new place and now you are not the lead pastors. Tell me how that has been, because I'm assuming awesome, great, God led you. But there has to be somewhere like, this is a little different.
Yeah. So there is a few things I can say to that. And the first is I did not realize how much I was going to go through an identity crisis.
Right.
Like, especially because, you know, you teach like, you're not what you do. You know, we say all this crap. No, it's not crap. It's absolutely 100% true. And then it gets tested in your life. And that was a huge part of my repenting and crying out to God journey. And even grief journey was like, first of all, Lord, I'm really sorry. I didn't realize that I held so much attachment to the conference I ran and the people that I led and living in New York City. And I'm a pastor in New York. I'm like, whoa, gross. Yeah. I'm sorry. I do also understand it was our assignment at the time and it was our calling. So I'm not going to be down on myself for that. Like, we walked in the authority you gave us. But then the transition and shift, like, thank goodness for Pastor Josh and Lisa. Like, they are our pastors. They are our friends. We run with them. But I respect them so much. But coming under their authority has been such a great joy because they actually are, how do I put this? Some of the most humble leaders I've ever met in my whole life. They are unafraid of our messy journey. They are the ones that would sit with us and pull us in and go, how are you really doing with all of this? Like our first Easter, they're like, how do you feel? And we were twofold. We're like, number one, we just got to come to one service, so we're good.
No lie. Yes.
But then you do wrestle with the, oh, this used to be what we ran. And so I think we're settled into it now, but you definitely have to wrestle through the change of the identity crisis and then settle in and walk under authority. And it's been a really beautiful journey. And I would say because of the leaders that God placed us under and we chose to place ourselves under. So, but yes, that's real.
Yeah. You know, speaking of leadership, a lot of people listen, the majority of them probably aren't pastoring a church, but they're all leading something in some way or another. I think that for us to say not everyone's a leader would be false because I think everyone has some sort of authority over some space in their world. And so a lot of people who are listening are leading people, and some of them are leading small groups. Some of them are leading churches. What is your encouragement to leaders walking alongside someone going through change? And you mentioned earlier, like, you're like, I don't think it's any surprise that this book is coming out in election year. And there is a lot of change that happens in our country, in people's lives. And so how do you lead people through that? You've walked through it, but what does it look like for our churches to be places where people can go in the midst of transition and change?
Yeah, I think a couple of things. The people that you lead and love and come alongside, you know, when they're struggling or frustrated or, you know, all of the things or have a lot of questions and they're maneuvering their own change. And that could be anything from a divorce to you stand on different sides of a political line to, you know what I mean? It could be anything. But I think the thing to always ask people is, where are you at in scripture right now? Like, what are you getting? I know that's crazy. And we want to have like a 5-step plan. But honestly, for me, a big litmus test is, are they in the word for themselves? Because if they're not, they're building on sand. So that's like your first, you just know, like, we have to be in the word. I feel like I'm an old lady now. I'm like, can't tell you reading the word today. Like, you know, I'm like, it matters. So I always ask that question. And then again, like, there's going to be seasons where you need to jump in a pit with somebody, but then there's going to be the seasons where you need to pull them out and say, okay, it's time. You've grieved. You're walking through the grief. Now we need a game plan for your recovery. We need a game plan for you to move forward. I mean, one of my best friends who I've done so much life with, we had one of those moments even this year. I had been coming alongside her. There'd been a lot of grief, a lot of change, a lot of pain. And there was this one day where I just went, oh, we've ticked over too far. You're laying down on your back and I have been trying to pull you up, but girl, you need to get up yourself. And now we need a game plan. Irene Rollins, she has been that girl for me. I call her when it's all breaking down and she's like, okay, you're going to be okay. But what's the game plan here? So I think it's like having discernment to know what do the people that you lead need, making sure that they are in the word, that they are in prayer. And also I would say if there's people that you're meeting with time and time again, and you give them homework and they're not doing the homework, when they come back to you, go, hey, I'm not going to want this more than you want it for yourself. So when you're willing to do the homework, like, I'm willing to meet with you. So I think it's those sorts of things, because people are going to need to be the captain of their own ship to maneuver change. I mean, juice is in the bone, okay? But you know what I'm saying? They're going to have to be the ones that make the choice to step into this and maneuver through the pain, the highs, the lows. But those are just a few things. There's so many other things that we could say here.
I love that, being the captain of their own ship, and neither one of us are disregarding Jesus in the ship. I get that. But there there is this idea of, like, to want something different for yourself and to want that change. And we both know sometimes sometimes you need someone to want it for you. And then you get to a spot where they're like, oh, I can't want any more. Like, I can't do any more of the work. You're going to have to want it for yourself. Yeah. I see that in some ways with my kids, you know, like, okay, like, I can't want this anymore for you.
Yes.
You need to start rowing your own boat. And I don't mean like, you know, totally, but just in some areas. Yeah, that's what it is. You've got to start doing that. You talk about that game plan. And I think that's important to know that there is this, like, we need to have an idea for what we're doing. Like, we need to not just flail around, but to have that game plan for what it's going to look like. Did you have that for you as you're moving into these changes, or was that something you developed for yourself along the way that you can go back and lean on now?
Yeah, I think it looks different every season. It's almost like going to the doctor and going, okay, doctor, what do I need for my game plan to do better in this season, to heal, to move forward? Because I think it does look different seasonally. In a very dark season for me about 4 years ago, the game plan with Irene, when I called her, was, okay, so here's your game plan, Andy. I'm going to do a Celebrate Recovery group, which is not just for addiction for me. It was for my raging codependency. Mm-hmm. And leading with codependency is a dangerous, like, cacophony of a whole lot of stuff. So that was like my weekly discipleship with the other group of pastors, where we would get together and do Celebrate Recovery so that we could grow and heal together. So that was one thing. I did a counseling intensive down in Colorado, EMDR, like the whole gamut. This was my game plan in that dark season. And then a lot of it had to do with exercising, because when I move my body, I actually love it. And the endorphins, everything, it helps my whole self. So that was a game plan then. The game plan when we moved this time was, don't isolate yourself. Because what I knew I could do is, going from like our community-based church, where we had smaller communities all over the city, you know, 200 people, you know, in each of these communities, when we came together every once in a while, it was bigger than that. But then we moved to Seacoast and it's massive. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, mama can hide here. And the Lord's like, oh, okay, that's cute. No, game plan is, you present yourself and you make friends. Making friends is like dating. You have to like go out. You have to put yourself out there. Some work, some don't. It's okay. And so I think it was things like that where, and then I was going to choose to be vulnerable. When I say Josh and Lisa and Jenna and Jason, the people that like brought us in really cared for us. There were moments where I could have held back, but I decided I'm going to trust these people, even though I fear rejection. Mm-hmm. That was part of my game plan. And so it looks different in every season. And again, health has been really important for me, especially the older I get. Yeah. I was like, I don't want to slide down. I want to keep steady and even get stronger if I can. So a few things like that, and making sure that I have margin. I'm a margin person. If I don't have margins, I break down. And so know yourself, know what you need, and make a game plan and stick to it.
I love that so much. You guys, this book just came out yesterday, so you can get it wherever it is. Braving Change, Release the Past, Welcome Growth, and Trust Where God is Leading You. We could spend an hour on those three sentences. Release the past, welcome growth, and trust where God is leading you. I was like, yes. Okay, I keep forgetting to ask people this lately, but I'm here for this. What are some things you're loving and reading right now?
Okay, so loving, I've got curly hair and I wanted to try out prose and I love it. So you do a survey online and it's like your hair texture, your curl pattern, it's your water, you put in your zip code. And they make like a special shampoo, conditioner, curl cream, all of it. And it's amazing. I love it.
I love that so much.
Yep. And then Nuuly, like I use Nuuly now. You can pause it at any time, but it's clothing rental.
I'm a Nuuly girl. I love it.
You are too. So you know, especially when you travel and teach. Yes. It's like, I have that same suit jacket in every picture. So I just need to freshen it up a little bit.
Yeah, totally.
And then shows that I'm loving. So Slow Horses is like a thriller British like show that's on Apple TV, which I love. Okay. And that's like the show I watch without my husband when I'm traveling. Yeah. And then we're watching Reacher together, which we both love too.
What is Reacher?
So good. Reacher is, it's kind of like a gosh, what would you say? He was like ex-military and now he comes in. It's kind of like a crime solving team thing.
Okay.
But it's on, that one's on Amazon. So
okay,
we watched that one together. And then books that I'm reading, two right now that I'm reading, because I love World War II. When we did our live happy hour, I remember saying this, but World War II historical fiction is my favorite genre. So I'm reading the Book of Names right now, which is really good. And then I'm reading the book Trust by Henry Cloud. Mm-hmm. And the subtitle's super long, so I'm not going to get it right. But it's basically about when to give it, when to receive it, how to cultivate it. It's like this whole thing, because trust, do we trust people? Do we not trust people? Learning to trust people quicker or not as quick. You know what I mean? Like, so it's actually a really great leadership book, but it's a great book for every relationship you're into. So
I love that.
All I have things.
Have used Prose before. Love it. I use Newly. I've not heard of either one of those TV shows. I'm going to put them on my list. And Trust, I haven't read it either, but I have some girlfriends who were going through it together last semester, and they loved it. And so, and Henry Cloud, yes.
It's
going to
be good.
Yes. Andy, thanks so much for coming on the Happy Hour. It's a joy to have you.
I love being with you. Thank you for having me.
You guys, I love talking to Andy. And of course, I have a Newly code for you. Okay. So if you want to do Newly the same way that Andy and I love Newly, go into the show notes, go to jamieivy.com/show notes, and you'll find Andy's picture and you'll find all the links that we talked about. So any book, show, whatever, we put the links there for you. But Newly is a clothing rental company that her and I both use. You get to rent, I believe it's 6 clothes at a time. You pick them out, they mail them to you, you wear them for the month, you mail them back, and then you get new clothes. It is super fun for just kind of rotating your wardrobe and getting those pieces that you don't want to spend $300 on a shirt. Oh my gosh, no way. But you can rent it and then send it back. So if you go to jamieivy.com/show notes, we'll put a code in there if you want to try it. There's a discount for you. You guys, thanks for being here. Again, if you leave us a rating and review, it would just be the kindest thing to do for the happy hour today. All right, guys, thank you for being here. The Happy Hour is produced and hosted by myself, Jamie Ivy, with assistance from Nikki Ogden and Ashley Caldwell, and the show is edited by Jason Talley.